Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the new media show. Rob Greenlee is he's down hard with the flu or something. He's been sick the last 3 days and has lost his voice. So I kind of put a shout out in the space last night saying, anybody want to come on? Come on. So, of course, I want to welcome Dave Jackson on from the School of Podcasting. Dave, how are you?
Good. Glad to be here. Sorry to hear that Rob's not feeling good. I could try to do a Rob Greenlee imitation, but, you know, a little over one.
You need to have a little more facial hair.
Yeah, a little more. He has a better... I just go for the homeless look. That's basically what I'm trying to achieve, and I think I've got it.
And I've got a little bit of an orange tint on the video today, so no, it's not... I don't have jaundice. It's just like a camera's out of white balance. So, but I want to welcome everyone. If you're, whether you're listening or viewing the show, thanks so much. Of course, our Blab audience is here.
Okay, now am I working?
Yeah, now Mr. Mike Dell joins us.
No echoes?
No echoes. Mike, welcome.
Good, thank you. I have no idea. I just recycled the whole Blab thing and it worked, so.
I was worried and I spent about 45 minutes doing some troubleshooting last night because of this new upgrade to the TriCaster. I went to the TriCaster Advanced Edition and it's now... very cool. They've got it set up so that you can do, it's called NDI protocol, and it's all IP-based. So if you have IP cameras, the screen captures are all IP-based, so it's pretty impressive. So, you know, I went from like really 8 potential video sources all the way up to 16 with, you know, all the overlays. It's truly overkill. I got more horses underneath the hood here than I will ever need. But, you know, when you get these software upgrades, it's a little bit overwhelming for any software upgrade you do, because then you're digging for how does this work now? And, yeah. You know, the feature creep and trying to figure out how you're going to implement stuff. And so I've had about a 10-day hardcore learning process here to get up to speed with the new software. And I'm still feeling a little bit lost.
It's always fun because it's like, it used to be here, especially if they change the name of a feature. That always drives me nuts. It's like, I'm looking, it's, you think they got rid of it. It's like, oh no, it's now called this and it's under this menu. And you're like, ugh.
Well, you know, for example, they've got the ability to, I used to have two, what they called network switches on my actual switcher right here. Mm-hmm. And it says net one, net two. Well, now net one and net two are gone off the menu item, and it's just 9 and 10. So I'm like, are you guys going to send me new buttons for the switcher to, you know, mimic what is it? Anyway, that's here nor there. Well,
back in the day with the old Grass Valley switchers, they were all hardware, so you didn't have to worry about software upgrades.
Yeah. And then you spend $500,000 or $1 million to buy a new switcher when you wanted to update every 5 years or whatever it was. So, yeah, everything's software now, so it's cool. But for those of you that can afford a TriCaster, they're a wonderful piece of equipment, but, you know, you got products like Wirecast and that are, you know, they're knocking on NewTek's door in a big way. So you just need the hardware to be able to run them. Dave, I know you just got off your show, and I hope you had a good morning. I think you dragged a bunch of your audience over, so I appreciate that.
Yes, and if you want more... follow me over there. So,
you found an article here that was put out 3 days ago by a guy that's back on the bandwagon. It says, to make real money, the podcast industry needs to stop calling them podcast.
Yeah, I don't get this. It's one of those things like whack-a-mole. About the time you think it's, you know, done, and we've all figured out that, you know, a facial tissue is a Kleenex. I'm sorry, that's the way it works, and you know. An audio that you download is kind of called a podcast. It's like, you know, if Microsoft embraced the phrase podcast, I'm not quite sure why everybody else has such a problem with it.
Leo tried that years ago and never went anywhere.
So I had a reporter, they were specifically looking at political shows, doing, I don't know when the article is going to be out, but he wanted to know how many political shows there are today as compared to 4 years ago and how the audiences vary. And, you know, that's very difficult to quantify. you know, changes in numbers. And he says, you know, what are you guys using right now? Is it still, is the word podcast? And this came up in this interview. I said, yeah, they're still podcasts. I said, you know, a lot of the folks are calling them on demand, which it really has been from the beginning, and on demand audio. And I said, maybe some folks will have a little bit better time understanding the term and aren't familiar with podcasting. But I said, they're still podcasts. So, yeah, so it came up in an interview I did, but I'm finding the media buyers are now using the word on demand a lot. But I did get an interesting email from one media buyer, and we can go into that. Out, I can't share who, but I can talk about the email that they sent out to all their vendors. But are we ever going to get past this? Someone trying to change the name of the industry?
Well, according to the article, he said we should be calling them series and episodes or shows. Like, that is somehow going to, if I just called it a show, we'd get tons of sponsorship immediately. But if I use the word podcast, apparently that just befuddles people. I'm not sure. And he goes into a whole other thing about how an author tried to make a 150-page book called Bookshots. And it just, it's, and of course at the bottom, there's a link to his website. So I'm not really quite sure. I love people that go, this is the problem, but they don't really, I mean, his solution is to call it a show. And that's where I go, and I'm not really sure we're running into that problem, especially now. It just seems, if this was 2004, that would be the time to talk about that. But at this point, I think everybody's got it down. It's this little audio thing or video. I think a lot of people assume it's audio because the audio ones, I think, are a little more popular than the video ones. But
yep.
It's one of those things I expect. We haven't had a podcasting is dead in a while.
No.
There are certain things that just pop up about every 2 to 3 years, and this is one of them. And I think in this case, this is just somebody kind of a link bait kind of thing. He just knows that every time they put out an example like this, people like me and other people in the space go, what is he talking about?
Yeah. And I agree with what Daniel's saying in the chat room. He says, I do think podcasters should stop using the word podcast in their show title. I agree, but you know, I call my show on iTunes Geek News Central, and I don't call it, or New Media Show, I don't call it the Geek News Central Podcast, but when I introduce my show, I introduce it as the Geek News Central Podcast. I talk about it as a podcast. So,
yeah, they'd be like saying it's Yoplait yogurt, yogurt. And, you know, once is enough.
Yeah.
We kind of got it.
So the, you know, and I actually saw someone requesting to do an interview with people that do a series. And I saw this in a Facebook group, and I'm like, yeah, I've got a series that's 1,105 episodes long. How that work as a series? Oh, no, I mean like someone that does annual series. I said, okay, I have 11 annual series, 11 consecutive series. I see a little bit of a resurgence of that too. People doing like 13 episodes and then taking off a couple of weeks. I continue to think that's a bad strategy.
Well, in some cases we need, I saw there was an article that came out earlier in the week that said how much podcasting is now all about storytelling.
Great.
And I was like, great. Guess who wrote the article? One of the guys at Gimlet Media, which of course has a whole network of podcasts that tell stories. And I was like, well, I don't know. To me, I kind of wonder like what happened to journalism. It just seems like everybody's just copying and pasting what everybody else said. Yeah. It doesn't seem like anybody's digging in deep. And
well, that brings up a good point. I saw yesterday, again on Facebook, boy, it seems like that's our location for news these days. Robert Scoble was talking about two radio stations in San Francisco. I think it's K-Ro and K-Rock. I think K-Ro, and if someone's from San Francisco in the audience can correct me if I'm wrong here, but these were two, let's go back 10 years. I think K-Ro was the mega station in San Francisco, and it could be heard all the way up to Washington State, down to, you know, it was huge, lots of power, a huge newsroom. And they got acquired by one of these, back then, they got acquired by one of these companies. It wasn't Clear Channel or it wasn't iHeart that was going and buying up lots of stations when the FCC deregulated and allowed, you know, lots of owners of stations, or one or two or three owners nationally of all the stations. It's not that bad, but it's close. And so over the past 3 years or 5 years, they've little by little, their news stations have been whacked, 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 whacked. And as of last week or midweek, they took a picture of the newsroom. You got this beautiful, any podcaster would die for this facility. You've got this 20 by 30 room with the monitors across the wall and the, you know, recording stations where they could do news spots, and empty. That complete news staff has been released. And she, wow, the person was writing an article associated with it, said that 25, and I guess this, maybe she was referring to salaries, but over the past 10 years, $25 million worth of radio talent has walked out the door or been forced out the door, which seems to me like a great opportunity for someone that wanted to have an entrepreneur spirit to be able to start launching some local networks to do local news. It will be tough going for a while, but what I thought was curious about the article was that her last straw, and she's been away from the company 2 or 3 years, was when they were arguing over a dog that could bark and make human sounds when it was barking, could say 2 or 3 words when it barked. When they were fighting over running that as a news piece, and something that was happening in some international crisis or something, and she just basically said, "I'm done. I'm out of here. This is not news. It's infotainment." And journalism is in trouble.
Yeah, I'm amazed. And I've started to kind of figure out in some cases, like, you remember around Christmas when there was that whole controversy about the red cup at Starbucks?
Yeah.
And if you look at that after a while, you start to realize that's not really news, but it's a Starbucks commercial.
Right.
And it's amazing how many. I remember I listened to the No Agenda show, and NBC, you know, is owned by General Electric. And General Electric makes trains, and they kept pointing out how many articles or quote news stories about how trains or planes were bad and trains were good.
Yeah,
I think the problem is there's 24-hour news stations, and there's not 24 hours worth of news, so they have to come up with something. And of course, product placement is another thing. So that whole Starbucks thing probably sold more coffee than if they would have bought a 30-second ad.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if that's what they meant to do, but that's the effect of it, because, you know, half the people were mad about it and the other half the people will go there just because, you know, like the whole, what was it, the Chick-fil-A thing. You know, they had the big controversy about Chick-fil-A, and, you know, half the people boycotted them and the other half the people that would have never gone there and go there anyway. But I guess, of course, we don't want to talk about politics, but.
And I think what we've got today, and it's you know, news is expensive to do real news. You got to have people that can go out on the street, can meet, can do interviews, can do background research to take that time, that day or two, to put together an article. And we live in a 24/7 world. So, you know, when we first launched Podcaster News, now it's strictly a, you know, podcast news site. But when we launched Podcaster News as our first product, as kind of a test, the idea of that was to launch, and we called it PCN, was to have local news. And what we wanted was podcasters in LA and San Francisco, and it would be a conglomerate of content creators that would freelance and bring in news stories. and it was a way early before its time product. And I don't know if it's even time for that type of a product now. But if you think about local radio, drive time radio, whether it be AM, of course, the only drive time I get now is driving kids to school. But drive time radio is local. You know, it's everything local. But can podcasts do the same thing? I don't know if it can. It would almost have to be live streaming versus podcast, because no one really wants to know that the garbage delivery is going to be late in a certain section of town 3 days later. You want to know it today, not 3 days from now when you do an on-demand listen.
I actually have a domain. I think it's akronpodcast.com, because that's where I live in Ohio. And if it's one of those, when I get some free time, I would love to go around and interview local businesses that are, you know, just mom and pop stores that could use a little boost in the arm and give the city a little bit of flavor. I think that would be, in some cases, maybe easier to get a sponsor than something that's, you know, nationwide.
Yeah.
Because you could get some local place to sponsor it, and it would be, now you'd never have a huge audience, but I could also see people that grew up here that moved away might want to know what's going on, and you could do, it wouldn't make it evergreen, but you could say, hey, this week at the Civic Theater, there's this and this and that. And again, keep it hyper local. It's something that's on my list of things to do before I die. I want to do a hyper local show just to see how it works. Cause on paper, it's like, wow, that might work. And like any other recipe, you don't know until you bake it, but it's something I definitely want to try.
Yeah. I started something like that for around here, and it was interesting for a little while. And then, you know, it's like a lot of things, I kind of just lost interest in it, and everybody else did too. So it never really got any traction, but I still have the domain name, so I might resurrect that again. It's called the Traverse City Podcast. It's where I'm at, up in Michigan.
You know, I just can't take on any more projects.
Yeah.
There's just no way. Yeah. You know, but one thing we thought about has to be easy is, and with mobile getting, you know, really rocking, and just be able to do a 60-second spot on something and send it off. You know, I've been doing some Facebook recordings in my morning drive, and that has been an interesting experiment to see how many people actually listen to, you know, 4 or 5 minute spot that I put exclusively up on Facebook. So, you know, there's room for some of this stuff, but I think in order to make a successful splash in a local community, you got to have 4 or 5, maybe 10 people working together so that you keep the flow of that content moving. You really got to have, for local wise, I think you have to have fresh content every day. And maybe kind of goes into a topic I did want to kind of divulge into a little bit today about content on our websites. And one thing too today, folks, we've got an open seat. So during the show, if you've got questions or want to ask for help, or if you have commentary that you want to add to this conversation, or say, me, I got an idea, please jump in.
Come on down.
I would like, though, if you would send a message, because sometimes we get spammers that try to jump in on the blab. Just put a chat thing in the chat room, what your name of your show is, before you jump in. And here we come, ADHD Think Tank.
This is Michael Ray.
All right.
Oh, let's see. Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can.
Oh, good.
Hey, Michael.
I'm out of the garage.
Excellent.
I had a thought, and this is just a thought, of course, but let's say if you had, like, I like Michael Dell's podcast. You know, he did that thing about the drive-in of the Traverse City, whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I like listening to that because you were talking about the drive-in, and Dave was talking about the small business thing. So what if you took, I guess it's just an idea, if you had, like, say, 2 or 3 hours in a day to put all this content together, whatever it may be, divide it up times 4 and throw it out to 4 different podcasts. That way you can kind of see what hits and what doesn't. And say your whole podcast for like 3 or 4 hours is about, say, the drive-in, say about this business, say about news, say about ADHD, whatever it may be, and you can just divide that all up into four, and then would that?
So you're saying four separate podcasts?
Right. Just throw them out there.
Because that gives you a half an hour per show. And if it's 4 to 1 is the typical ratio I use, 4 hours. Right. So if I divide that by four, that is 0.12 of an hour. Yours. So if I times that by 60, that leaves me 7 minutes to do that show.
I think what you have to do with this type of a,
it'd be a really local, short show.
You have to be much more efficient. There can't be there's no editing. You click the mic on, you go, and there's no ID3 tags. There's none of that stuff. And again, maybe it's live stream versus actually something you subscribe to. I think the formula is difficult. It might be available. You know, if you're going to do local, you have to do daily, Monday through Friday. And you have to keep it reasonable. And the problem, though, is again, at least here in Hawaii, it's 5 a.m. to 9 a.m., 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. Those are drive times in Hawaii. And that's when everyone's just, you know, sitting in the traffic. So I think if you had a live streaming show during that time that you ultimately push as a podcast, that might be a better formula for local. But again, how many people do you need to make that happen? You know, you got DJs now that are going 4 hours, but they've got two or three people behind the booth that are, you know,
feeding them topics,
callers and all that stuff. So it's possible, but I think it takes more than one person to do this.
Yeah, that would be something I would. Like if I do a local show, the first thing I'm going to do is go out and research the topics and see exactly what I'm going to talk about. Because in some cases, you may not have, you're like, well, there's got to be a ton of stuff going on in Akron. What if there's not? There might not be any news to report.
Or you might be grabbing the newspaper from yesterday, if your town even has a newspaper anymore, or going online and reading whatever local, you know, forums there are to, you know, try to find out what's going on. I think filling the content's challenging if you don't have enough people helping you.
Yeah.
It has to be.
Okay. So if just one of the shows was bigger than the other ones was just like Dave, you do tools thing.
Weekly Web Tools. Yep.
Yeah. Weekly Web Tools. And so that might be like a short, maybe one big one and then maybe just two short ones just to keep your, you know.
I always say start with one podcast because
I'm starting with one, and I'm buying domain names, so in case it does go further, then I can go. If not, then it's, you know, it's $15 a year. So
gets into a very much of a problem when you're up to 367. Like,
is that what you got?
Yeah.
I thought I was bad. I think I have 107, and I keep thinning the herd, and then I buy more.
I have been, too. I've been thinning the herd, but then I buy five more.
Yeah. But when you got that idea in your head, instead of writing it down, you want to catch it right then and there. Because I think I saw Jim do that one time. Dave was saying something, and he'll get on the computer real quick. I think that's available. So, you know. But anyway, it's always a good show. So we'll let somebody in here to talk. So
thank you, Michael.
We'll see you. Thanks.
Bye. So one thing I wanted to talk about, and Dave, I know you do this, and Mike, I know you do this somewhat as well, is strategies that. And I haven't shared this in a while. I know you guys have probably heard this. Boy, we lost Mike again. Strategy that I have used over the years, you know, you think, okay, 11 years doing a podcast. How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep adding listeners? And, you know, the story I like to tell is really this. It's the ongoing strategy of how I kept building audience share, and Dave, you'll have some points too because you follow some of the strategy, even though you may not do it exactly like I do. But, you know, I started out as a blogger, and most people don't start today podcasting having already written content. They're typically coming in, and episode one is the first piece of content maybe they've ever put on the internet. I had the advantage of having been writing, and not necessarily successfully, for a couple of years before I started my show. And what I found was that after I started podcasting, just, you know, to make, I don't want to go too deep into this today, but what I found was after I started podcasting, the supplemental information that I blogged on off podcast days really was an incredible multiplying factor in helping me build my audience. And then on a whim, you know, I went to some trade shows and did some, did interviews and had this additional content that we're putting on the website. So I've been watching, you know, and that's been the process, full 11 years. Blog, go to events, put additional content up. I'm even letting my writers now go to events and they're bringing content back and putting it online. So, and it does cost money to do that. It's expensive, but at the same time, that blogging / podcasting, there's a meld there because I can point people back to articles on the website. So, long story short, two things. This past January, we went to CES. We've published a little over 200 articles, interviews from CES on my site, and some of the other writers have posted varying amounts on that were part of the team on varying amount on their sites. And of course, TPN.TV had all the interviews. And the simple thing of saying in the introduction of those interviews, hey, my name is Todd Cochran. I'm here with Tech Podcast Network. But of course, to introduce my show, Geek News Central, blah, 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 has resulted in, I see these incremental spikes in audience growth after CES. You're kind of growing, or maybe you're flat, and then you see this bump, you know, and there's nothing else to really determine what causes that bump. And I saw about a 10 or 11 this year so far, that content that we created at CES has had a 10 or 11% bump in my show. And when the show's 11 years old and you get 10 or 11% bump over about a 60-day period, that is something that you want to dance to. So I can't emphasize enough for content creators out there that are creating content that is not these interview shows, please shoot me in the head if I have to listen to another interview show. But if you're doing content that is your storytelling and talking about topics, and you know, it's okay to have guests, so don't get me wrong, but entrepreneur type shows, I think we've got about 5,000 of them now, but the ability to be able to bring content that's not normally covered in your podcast into your show, or has as a sub show series, has got incredible, incredible value. Now today, after I have an interview at 9 my time or 8 my time, and then as soon as that's done, I've got my rig put together, and I got invited to go and see Solar Impulse. I don't know if any of you have heard of Solar Impulse. It's a solar aircraft that's flying around the world. It's been here in Hawaii for a number of months because they had battery trouble on their flight from Japan to Hawaii. Set all kinds of world records doing it. So why do I want to say that? Okay, what's important about me going to this Solar Impulse event? Well, I'm going to go and do a handful of interviews on this amazing technology that they're using to fly around the world. And then I'll bring that back. And over the next week, I'll put a couple of those up on the website as supplemental content pieces that will ultimately bring more traffic into my show. So if you're a podcaster and you are flat, your audience is flat, you need to start thinking about how to attract more listeners. And you got to go outside the box. You have to go to local events, even if it's sub-related to your show and not exactly a direct connect, you need to go and you know, while you're there, bust out either the iPhone with a, you know, an iRig type of recorder and do an interview with someone and get some extra content that you can feed your audience with. Dave, you've written articles on your website that are not necessarily attached to a podcast release, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I have davidjackson.org, and just because I had a domain, started playing with blogging, and the only reason it's still there is it started to rank really well for podcasting. Otherwise, I would have killed it.
Right.
I put those blogs on my website, and I was like, well, all right, I guess it's not bad if it's going to rank. But yeah, I always say growing your audience, number one, you have to figure out who your audience is, figure out what they want, and then give it to them, and then go to where they are. That's where you're talking about going to these events. Yeah. I mean, I run a local Cleveland podcasters meetup, and it's a small little group, but those people are bringing other people in. When I go, I was at podfest.us earlier in the year in Florida. And that was another one where I saw a spike a little bit, you know, not a huge spike. Spike is one of those weird words that gets used all the time. But I definitely saw a bump in numbers because I met about 150 either podcasters or wannabe podcasters, did my best to bring value to every single conversation that I did. And hopefully they went, well, I need to go subscribe to this guy's show. And we all want that 10,000 download switch that if I could just do this one thing, if I could just interview whoever, you know, I would be set. And it just doesn't work that way. And it does. It's I'm listening to are you familiar with Gary Vaynerchuk?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So his new book is called Ask Gary V, and he talks about how businesses, you know, take 2 to 3 years to really get going. And he goes, that's the hard part. He goes, so all these entrepreneurs are starting up and they're 6 months in and they're like, well, why am I not, you know, a millionaire yet? And it's like, right. it takes a little longer than that. And so that's it. If your numbers are flat, you're probably, I just wrote an article that says, I'm a musician as well. And it drives me nuts when I go to see a band and they stare at their shoes. And I said, and so many podcasters now are just staring at their stats and they're staring at iTunes when they should be staring at their audience. I talked about this earlier today on my show. There's a guy named Max Flight that does a show called Airplane Geeks. And he started a group in Slack. And I know some people use Facebook. And he says he's getting lots of ideas for his show directly from his audience. So he's not guessing. I wonder if my audience would want to talk about this. He knows. And he says it's interesting because his audience is there to interact with him. He goes, but they're also now networking with each other.
Right.
And so he's just got this little pool. It's like a focus group now.
Yep.
And it's one of those things I always say, I use the analogy of weight loss. You know, you can look at the scale and scream, go down, go down if you're trying to lose weight. But if you instead focus on, you know, eating right and exercising and getting sleep and drinking water, the numbers will go down. So if you focus on your audience, making good content, being consistent, and making sure it doesn't sound like it's recorded underwater, then, you know, those numbers will go up. It's just not, it's a, what's the old, it's a long tail. It's a marathon, not a sprint kind of thing. So, and that's why I go to different events and, you know, anything that's about any audience, like I've gone to, book shows, you know, where there are a lot of authors. Why? Because authors are trying to get more publicity for their books. So I'll go to that. It's not really a podcasting event, but any kind of event where you have an audience that, you know, needs more exposure. Danny Pena, he's been on this show, Hall of Fame podcaster, just like Todd. And he would go out and hand flyers to his show about his podcast to any kind of sci-fi or gaming event. He would go out and say, because he'd go to the event with a recorder, and then he would hand out flyers to his show.
Yeah, Mike, I think you've got an echo going on a little bit here.
Yeah, I think I probably do. Yeah, I'm having all kinds of fun today with stuff. So, all right, I'll try again.
You've got internet cables going through your flooding basement. That's what you
Yeah, something like that. All right, I'll be back.
Hey, the one thing that... was being asked, I think we need some more small business type shows. You know, I think the small business shows, the challenge they have is that often small business is local. So this is where going back to that local conversation, if you have a small business show, that would be a perfect tie-in to a local show if you're going to do local content. But the challenge there again becomes, how many local businesses are doing something cool? You know, a lot of local businesses are just, you know, a little bit boring sometimes. And they're struggling, like you said, Dave, that first 2 or 3 years they get off the ground.
Yeah.
I need a cough mic.
All that equipment in that studio, no cough mic?
Yeah, I've never needed it. Of course, this morning I got frog mouth.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I have a, like, if I was to go here, there's a local pizza place that's been around since, like, I don't know, the 30s, that I'm sure has a great backstory about how it was handed down from one generation to the next. And that's cool, but not every business is going to have a cool backstory. You know, I'm not going to go interview the local Subway owner. I don't know that that's going to be quite as entertaining.
Right.
So
it's, you know, local is a, it's, you know, a lot of us have talked about it, but boy, it's a challenge. But, you know, going back to what we're talking about in this extra content is what you're really, you know, if you think about your show and if you've done a survey of your audience and you have an idea of that demographic and you're looking at the demo and saying, yep, that's exactly who's I thought was listening, or, I thought some other people would be listening. That's where maybe the opportunity becomes to go and try to broaden that audience base a little bit and bringing in some. And again, the content doesn't have to be exact. It can have some offshoots, as long as it's, you know, the general. I'm not saying shove that down your standard RSS feed, because I don't do that. What I do to the extra content that I create that's outside of the normal show series is I have a special feed just for a special show, just for those types of events, so that I tell the people, the folks that are listening to my regular show, hey, listen, by the way, I've got 3 interviews for Solar Impulse, or I've got some stuff from a UK trade show, or we've got stuff from NAB or from CES that goes into that separate special media feed. And at the same time, not only do I grow, keep my audience recharged, keep new audience members come in through the power of Google, because my site gets incredible. And you know, again, I've been at this a long time, but I've got 13,000 articles on geeknewscentral.com, and you would not believe, you would be shocked of the power of Google. And on a slow day, it's 35,000 to 40,000 hits on the website.
Wow.
To various articles. That's on a slow day, just because people are searching for topic X. And guess I'm in the top 2 or 3 search results. I get clicked on and they come to the website. They see that, they read the article, and still capture time there is very, very short. You have 15 seconds really at the most, because what they're going to do is they're going to read the title of the article that they've just Google searched for. If they figured out, yep, this is the actual topic I want to learn more on, they're going to peruse the article, kind of skim it. And if they decide during their skim that they want to read it, they then stop and read it. You may have them on the website for 2 minutes. But always looming right there in the sidebar is, man, this guy's got a podcast. There's that subscribe button, and it's on every single page, and bam, and it's a small percentage of people that will click subscribe. But if you're getting 40,000 hits of Google traffic a day or more coming to the website, it doesn't take a lot of 0.5% day to day to grow your audience significantly. And it's been part of my overall long-term strategy. That's how I keep fresh new people coming into the show. And it's based upon all this extra content that we're putting together and we're putting on the website. Now, I used to write it all. Now I have folks that do most of the writing. You know, they write. I don't set out agendas. If I find an article I think needs to be cool, I'll send it to the writing team and someone can grab it if they want it or not. But most of the writers on the team write what they want to write about. I don't force them to write on specific topics, but they also know what the site's, you know, basic the genre is, and they write to it. So long term, for someone just starting, and even let's say you're only a year out, this blogging or this extra content may not pay dividends until year 2, 3, 4. It's the long haul where you win, not the short haul. Because in year 1 and 2 of my show, I didn't gain audience because of the content on my website. It just wasn't enough depth.
And you never know what's going to be popular in 2 years that you wrote about, you know, now. And 2 years later, that becomes, you know, something popular. And, you know, people keep coming back to these articles. And, you know, I know I wrote a blog post on my personal site, MikeDell.com, probably 4 or 5 years ago about a particular motorcycle that I had. And that still is the number one article on that site. And, you know, I've sold that bike 3 years ago.
I've got a Excel article that was written just on a whim. It was a trick in Excel, how to do something with a macro. That article alone gets 1,000 hits a day. And just month after month, year after year. And I think it was put on the website in 2008, you know, something like that. So what do I have on that? What I have on that page? That page gets. I've spent special attention on that page to make sure that they know there's a podcast associated with, because that particular article gets a huge amount of traffic. So I took some extra. It just shows you what can happen.
Well, that's a great question. Are you doing any kind of? I mean, I know so many people that spend a huge amount of time researching SEO. And the right keywords to use, and you're just writing content for your audience, basically, is what it sounds
like. We write original content. Everything is original content. So the article may not be original. It may have been on 20 sites yesterday, but at the same time, it's all written original. We don't copy anything out of press. If we do, it's very, very short, maybe 2 sentences or something. But it's
quotes.
Yeah, it's very, very short. Now, you know, let me give an example of some articles that were written this week. Okay, so the Gmail fiasco yesterday from April Fool's Day, the mic drop thing. You know, we wrote, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 paragraphs. Talking about I got an article about artificial gills. It's an underwater breathing apparatus. Talk about Greece getting its first self-driving bus. We've got Xbox One consoles getting full development kit support. It runs the gambit. We've got an article about a wearable, a new watch from a company called Bitum. I mean, it's a very obscure company no one has ever heard of before, but someone's going to be searching for Bitum, B-I-T-T-I-U-M, in the coming weeks when their product launches. And I'll be in the top 2 or 3 search results for that because I took the time to write about that article. That'll get me some hits for that particular product. So it really goes. And that's just 2 days. And again, that's not all the content. So a lot of people poo-poo putting additional content on their website. To me, it's the biggest secret weapon going.
Well, and the beauty of it is, especially if you've got a player there on your website, when they go there and they start reading the article, and then if they click play, they're going to stay even longer, which has a potential to boost your Google rankings because Google's like, hey, when people go to this website, they stay versus this person, they go and leave after 10 seconds. So this must be better content. Thus, they boost your rankings that way.
Dave, you know, you weren't – go ahead, Mike.
I said I've always found that if you do your website for humans rather than the machines, you do better eventually. And a lot of people write their website to appeal to the machines, not the people.
Yeah.
Dave, you know, last year you were involved in the review process on Podcast Awards, and you went to podcasters' websites, and can you agree with me that you are shocked by the number of podcasters' websites you went to that had no way to subscribe to the show on the front page of their website?
I think we need one of these.
And now, it's time for a power rant.
It's ridiculous. My favorite thing is people go, I'm not getting any engagement on my audience. I don't know why people aren't contacting me. And you go there's no contact button. Or there's no subscribe button. you have to search for the play button. It's like, really? Really? Come on now. Yeah. And I was amazed at that, because I'd heard you talk about that in the past, and I thought, oh, it can't be.
How is that possible?
I don't know. I think it's where people, not that you need, you know, you don't have to listen to Mike or me or Ray or Daniel, but it would make sense. I mean, if I was going to go hand gliding, I don't know that I would take advice from free websites on the internet. I might want to get somebody who has actually been doing it before, so I don't get up in the air and go, now, how do I land this thing? So I just think it's people that maybe in some cases jumped in a little too soon and they just haven't thought it out. Or in many cases, they're too close. I know I myself have been my own victim of what I call front page creep, where I'll just keep adding one more thing and one more thing and one more thing to the front page. And then all of a sudden you can't figure out what to do when you get to my website. Do you want to subscribe? Do you want to do the newsletter? Do you want to do this? So, but that's where it's always a good idea to get somebody that's in your target audience. And especially if you can do this face to face and have them go to your website for the first time and say, okay, I want you to subscribe to my podcast and see how hard it is.
That'd be a good service for someone to start.
Yeah. There actually is one. I forget the name of it. I used to own the website firsttimevisitor.com. And I directed it. No, that's not it. Doggone
it. It's shocking to me that you go to these folks' websites and the podcasters' websites and you can't, or the podcast is on page 2.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's amazing the amount of, you know, people that I'll help, you know, that I'm going to help with a problem. I'll get on GoToMeeting and we'll go to their website and I have to ask them, well, where's your podcast? you know, it's like you're a podcaster. Make it obvious where your podcast is, even if it is on page 2, but make it obvious.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think in some cases they're just so focused on the next episode that they forgot to, you know, cross the T and dot the I. And or my favorite is when I don't think they've ever had to do this. When somebody says, yeah, look for me in iTunes. iTunes search is not very good. And so I've had people that will contact me and they'll say, I'm having a problem with my podcast in iTunes. And I'll go, what's the name of your show? And they'll give me the name and I'll put it into iTunes and hit search. And it's like, I got nothing. And then you find out later that I've seen this a lot where people will have their show with no spaces, like all one word. There's all sorts of weird things like that I just want to go, and they're telling their people, yeah, just search for me in iTunes. I'm like, well, you should probably go do that, because there was one yesterday. It was the Reflections podcast. There's 50 Reflections podcasts. And I was like, you need to, you know, make a button on your website so you could say, or if you're using WordPress, you could use a plugin like PrettyLink to just, like, for me, it's schoolofpodcasting.com/iTunes. Super easy to send people to iTunes that way. And yeah, it's, I think sometimes we're just a little too close to the forest to see the trees.
Then I just looked up one of the old time podcasters that was formerly very successful, quit podcasting and has now come back to it. And his podcast, you go to the website and it says, follow me on iTunes or follow me on Stitcher. There's no RSS feed. You've really got to dig to find an RSS feed on that site. And I always tell everybody, you know, don't promote iTunes. iTunes doesn't need your promotion. Promote your website and then make it, you know, make the choice be there, you know, so you've got all these different options, you know, so you cover everybody. You know, don't say, well, find me on Stitcher. Well, have you been to Stitcher lately? It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I always say your website should be like your main hub. And then all these other places are satellite offices. I mean, you know, everybody here has been around. We probably remember mp3.com and the fact that, or MySpace, and both those things are just, you know, they're asterisks now on a Wikipedia page. And I always say, I expect someday before I die, Facebook might end up there, because for a while there, they were changing so much stuff that people were leaving in droves. Now, I don't know if that'll ever happen, but I've seen other sites that are, quote, too big to fail that are now, you know, just gone. And so, if I mean, Danny Pena, to bring him up again, he started off on mp3.com, and when that went away, you kind of lose your audience because you weren't telling people to go to your website. You were saying go here, and if that goes away, I forget, for a while there was a competitor to Patreon, and if you told people to go to that website, it's not there anymore, and especially if it's in a podcast, now you've got four episodes promoting something that doesn't exist, whereas if you say, go to your website /support, something you have control over, then you can redirect that to whatever the new service is now that you're using.
Yeah, it's like that voicemail thing that just went out. Was it K7?
Yep.
And many of us had K7 for years. I stopped using K7 about 3 years ago, so I wasn't caught up in the K7 cancellation fallout. There's a question that one of our friends on the show is asking. I do YouTube podcasts, Twitch, and photography. I enjoy doing all of them, but unsure what put on the front page. I'm constantly changing it. I think you just, for me, what's always worked is whatever's new. That's what's on the front page. It's if you go to my website right now, it's my podcast is the second episode down on the page, but yet on the right-hand column of the website, right there, it says on iTunes and Android by email or via RSS, subscribe. I think you're because you have passion on all three of those topics, you want, because here's what's going to happen. People are going to find your site. They're going to come to your .com. They're often not going to come to a sub page unless Google's driven them there. And if you go to, if you think your podcast stats suck, go look at your web stats from SiteMeter or StatCounter or what is the one from Google?
Google Analytics.
Google Analytics. And you go look at the bounce times. Look at how long people stay on the front page of your website. And if you're worried about your podcast numbers, look at your bounce time on the main page of your website. If you have 10, 15% of the people that are coming to your website that are staying longer than a minute on your front page before they leave, consider yourself good, because most traffic, 80% of the traffic that's going to come to your webpage, you've got 15 seconds. That's all you've got before they leave your page forever. So, you got to make sure that those 15 seconds count.
And that's tough. You have to figure out, what do I want? What's the number? If I can only have one, what is the one thing? Maybe it's sign up for a newsletter. And then in the newsletter, you promote these other things that you're doing.
If I go to a website and there's a pop-up for a newsletter, I'm instantly gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the quickest way to get me to leave.
I mean, I'm gone. I close the tab. It's like you're not respecting my time. I've come to your website to look at your website, look at your content, and you're going to ask. I don't even know you yet, and you're going to pop up and ask me to sign up for a newsletter. Who do you think you are? Let's be honest. If there's a link there to sign up for a newsletter, that's fine. But those sites that have those grotesque pop-up newsletter things,
Sumo Me has this thing now. It's a popular service that people are using that where literally you'll go to it, you read about a sentence and a half, and all of a sudden, literally it takes up the whole 3/4 of the top of the page that's asking you to subscribe to the newsletter. And you then have to scroll down to go back to your article. And I'm like, well, it got my attention. They talk about interrupt marketing. And I'm like, well, it definitely interrupted what I was doing. And I'm with you. I'm kind of like, wow, that's annoying. Not really what, that doesn't inspire me to sign up.
If you've intrigued me enough to sign up for your newsletter, I'm going to find your newsletter link. And it better be on the sidebar or someplace easy to find. But don't just punch me in the face.
That's like, those little bit of delay here. It's like on Facebook, you get these link bait articles and you click that link. And I mean, you got 7 pop-ups in your face before you know it. And you can never get to the actual article that got you there. And I don't know who falls for that, but it must be working.
I don't have it anywhere on my site. I have a newsletter link. And I'm and it signs them up for Google Groups and I send one-way emails and it's free, and that's what I've used forever, and it works, and I don't have to pay anybody any money, and I don't do no click tracking, and you know, it's, they get the newsletter. It's an email with the show notes and links. So I'm sure there's some marketing people on here going, oh, you're missing these opportunities. Well, I'd rather have my audience be happy and unannoyed than to.
Well, and anytime, you know, I went on a rant a couple weeks ago about the whole promo swapping and things like that, and people that work so hard to beat the system, right? They're gaming the system. And it's the same thing with web design. There are those people that stuff keywords or do whatever they do to get to the top of Google, and their content isn't that good. You know, yeah, I rank great, and you can tell people, look at me, I'm the number two guy for whatever. But all it takes is Google to come out with a new algorithm, and you're back down in the middle of nowhere. And I'm like, if you had just taken that time and put out good content for your audience, that usually doesn't, algorithms usually don't mess with that, because you've got a proven track record.
Yeah, that was why one of the rules is I don't care, to be honest with you, I don't even review the articles that my team writes. I see what type of traffic they get, but as long as they're not cut and pasting, you know, right. That's the main thing, is everything's original. And we went even to the level of a pain point where every tech podcast person that went to CES, so we have 200 articles, right? Let's say we have 200 interviews. We required every host to write their own write-up for each article. So like Daniel is with us at some events, or was it this year? Yeah, Daniel was with us, and he had interviews that he did, and he wrote those interviews up and put them on his website. I took the interviews Daniel did, and I had my writers write a separate write-up, not using his words, on his website. So Daniel gets the advantage of having the first person being the interviewer, and he'll get the most of the traffic. I've got the advantage of having an associated article on my website. Again, different words, Google treats, and probably on those interviews, if you go to Google and look them up, we probably dominate the top three or four results in Google for that particular product. So one way or the other, we're going to get them. And that's been our long-term strategy on just writing articles that are, you know, spoken word, that they're not contrived. And if we get lucky on Google, it's sometimes Google rewards you for consistent long-term content. Or they do.
Yeah. Well, it takes a lot of work. You should get rewarded.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, am I writing, and don't get me wrong, to have writers writing for my site, it's not cheap. That's a $6,000 to $8,000 annual budget to do that. But one feeds the other. So the articles feed the podcast. The podcasts feed the articles. Machine works. And again, before I was able to afford it, I wrote the articles for the first 5 or 6 years. It was me, myself, and I. Right.
And it's got to pay for itself somewhere. So
yeah, I didn't really, and I know some of you don't want to blog. That's fine. But I just wanted to share it with you, a potential strategy to help build your audience as you're going forward. And the value of that written content on non-podcasting days is big. But you also have to have a topic that's broad enough that you can support writing daily.
Yeah. Certain niches are too narrow to have a lot to talk about every day.
Yeah. Well, since you brought up budgets, how are things going with the podcast awards?
I think we'll see what happens when nominations open, because people really start paying attention. I think we're up to $800 or $900 on the GoFundMe campaign.
Okay.
We're getting plenty of registrations. People are registering their shows, and those are, and I'll have to start at some point here before I get way behind. putting up the, let's see where we're at exactly for the GoFundMe campaign.
You announced the...
The rules. The
rules, yeah.
Yeah, we're at $843 of $25,000 we want to raise. So we'll see. We'll see where we get. It's a start.
It's
yeah,
a start.
The rules have been announced. I've only had one long-term podcaster who was winning a lot get angry that we created this new legacy, category. And maybe we're going to, what's a better word than legacy? What's something that you, what's a word you can use? Maybe the audience can help us here. What we're trying to do is honor shows that have won many years in a row and call them something. And I own the, here's the funny thing. I own the Domain Podcast Hall of Fame, but I don't think that the guys over at Podcast Movement would appreciate me using that.
Right.
That would not be cool. No,
yeah,
no.
You don't want to duplicate what they're doing.
Yeah, legends might be better, yeah?
Yeah, a little more of an ego stroke.
That's yeah, I like that. One full swoop, maybe we've solved it.
Yeah, you can put that on a business card. Dave Jackson, podcast legend.
Yeah, legends. My son thinks he's a legend with League of Legends.
Yeah, and some of them are legends in their own mind.
The legends of podcasting. I think you guys are on something. That's good.
Yeah.
So the rules really, the biggest change we talked about on the last show, I don't want to dig too much deep into it, but there'll be podcasters and listeners doing the reviews. The steering committee going forward will be helping shape how the awards go in the future. So what we really need now is podcast sponsors. So we've got to raise... Just to pay for the trophies alone and pay for this year's awards, make sure everyone has got gets a trophy and all that. That bill in itself is about it'd be a little lower this year. Probably $7,000 will be the bill for the trophy bill. And if you haven't ever seen one of these trophies, let me show you. I have a sample trophy.
You can just slap my name on that. That's fine. Yes. Bernie wants to see the trophy. He's been
so
quiet.
Okay, so this says, so everyone reads on it. It says sample trophy.
Got it.
I didn't put my own name on it. Sample trophy. But this is what the trophies look like.
Pretty cool.
And this is about $500.
Wow. Holy cow. Throw that out to the audience. Do you know of a cheaper place to buy trophies? But those are, I mean, I've seen them. That's
they're heavy
as well. Yeah. I was going to say.
Hey,
the place that makes
it, might as well do it right.
And I, you know, let's be honest, I probably could find a cheaper place. The place that makes these are the same place that makes the bullets for the Country Music Awards.
Wow.
So it's at least come out of the same factory. And of course, they do a lot of other stuff too.
Yeah.
But, the molding on it and everything and the pour and the laser etching, and I probably should put it. There you go. Can you guys see it? Is it straight on your camera?
No, it's backwards.
It's backwards now. Oh, it shows backwards.
No, it's backwards to us.
Oh, just almost broke it. So, you know, there's just a certain amount. And the server cost, you know, that's, you know, $100 a month or so. So,
other thing that people don't realize, I remember when... Rick was playing with it, shall we say. I looked into buying a script, like a voting script that was really airtight. Holy cow, those are not. So when people go, well, why is he charging so much to rebuild his? No, there's a lot to that kind of technology. And I was amazed. And it was X amount of money, like per voter, basically, which got ridiculously expensive really, really quick.
And the other thing you have to watch out for is, you know, if you buy something cheap or you put a cheap site together, people will be able to game it.
One of my first podcasts was battlingbands.com, and the whopping prize was you got to battle again for free. It wasn't like they were, you know, $500. It was, I think you saved $5. And I was amazed at the amount of people that would go through all this IP hiding stuff so they could vote multiple times. It was ridiculous. And there was no prize. So I can only imagine if it was a podcast award. And again, podcasters can be kind of geeky. So they're going to figure that kind of stuff out and how to game the system again, just so they can take home their awards. So, yeah.
Classy says she wants one of those extra trophies no one picked up. You know what I should do? We should eBay those things or auction them. Because I got trophies from This American Life. I have trophies from a whole bunch.
Yeah, that's how you raise the money, Todd.
Yeah, I ought to auction those things. As you know, that is true. That is an idea.
when you're in Vegas, go down to the Pawn Star shop. Maybe they'll buy them.
I think. And before I bought sample trophies, I actually have one of the spare trophies in the back.
Yeah.
It's when they were square. When they first started, they were square. And before we went to the fancy design. So those won't be as cool as these.
Yeah. That Daniel says in the chat room, that'll be the new thing. Award bombing. Well, I'll just buy awards to put behind us.
Yeah. And there was a few complaints in the in Twitter on people. Oh, you have to buy your way into the podcast awards because they had to pay the $10 registration fee. And
I like that idea because
I'm trying to, you know what the goal is there.
Well, and again,
give them an incentive to actually show up.
People that, you know, not to pick on This American Life, I don't see Ira Glass caring about the podcast awards or whoever. He's got other things on his plate. And so I like that idea. And it's like anything else. I mean, I love the fact that you tweak the rules a little bit, and who knows, next year you might go, yeah, it'll be like football. Every year we tweak things a little bit, and here's the new rules, and go from there. And it's one of those things, Todd, you're well aware of, no matter what you do, there's no way everybody's going to be happy.
Never.
There's always hate mail the day after, and you know, you like, okay, you look at it and go, all right, well, we'll think about that, and then you move on.
And the thing is, people are saying, oh, you're just lining your pockets. I wish. I wish.
Yeah, that's when I looked at buying a script, that's when I was like, holy cow, that's not, if you're going to buy something that, and again, even that, I like the way you guys do it with the email. It's very easy to debug that way and that whole nine yards. So
there's always going to be folks that try to game the system. But in the end, the way we've set up the stages of information, it's very hard to game. It's really difficult to do so. And it's obvious when they are. And, you know, the code is 11 years old on the website. And frankly, way long in the tooth.
Yeah.
So it has to go. And here's what the other point is. And I'll just end talking about the podcast words at this point. It has to stand on its own. And we have to raise enough money to make these changes. If we don't, 11th annual will be the last. If the community cannot get behind it and don't want to get behind it and don't support it, it'll be the end of it. There's just no way. And Dave, people have no idea the amount of work that it takes to pull this thing off. Yeah. It's a huge amount. And I'm not getting salary to do any of this. So, and I thought I was out. Golly, I thought
it's like The Godfather. Out. Just about the time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. And if the community supports it, great. If they don't, we'll have a lot of money to put on a bar. We won't do it that way. We'll have money to put on a bar somewhere for a podcaster party. Yeah. We'll raise the money. I hope all it takes is 250 shows. 250 shows out of 300,000 to put $100 on the line, and that'll get us probably through next year. So
pony up, people.
Pony up to the bar.
Yeah. Awesome.
And we did raise the price on the sponsorship level this year. So it's probably 1 year we'll keep the sponsorship level up at $500, but in years past it's been $250, and maybe that was a mistake. I'll find out here soon if we don't fill the columns. But the people don't realize it's the site will get between now and next year about 11 million hits.
Wow.
So go price that type of advertising on any other site. So it's a fantastic deal as far as you know, what you're going to get in banner impressions alone. So
awesome. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, you said this about a month and a half ago and I cannot find it, so I'm just going to have you repeat it so I know exactly where to look now. You were talking to Rob about how many shows a week go into iTunes.
Oh.
Do you have that stat?
Right now it's about 3,000 to 5,000 a month.
A month. Wow. Okay. Because I was talking to somebody about the dreaded new and noteworthy. And, you know, so I'll go ahead and, and I said, I think one of the reasons why it just doesn't carry that much weight anymore is there are more and more podcasts coming out. And I remember you saying that stat. I think that's a lot of info coming out that,
So let's just take a number 3,000, but by the end of 2 months, there'll be 1,500 of them left.
Yeah. Well, that's the other stat. PodCamp Ohio, man, how many years ago was that? That you said, you know, most podcasters don't make it to episode 7. Is that still the case?
Yeah, it's still, that's 7, 8 is kind of the number. It's bizarre. Oh, yeah. It's just, and it's held true through these. And I think what it is, oh, I'm excited about doing a podcast. And oh, this is going to be great. And do episode 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And we're like, though I see the complaining that you're spending too much time doing it. You're spending too much time editing.
Right.
You've only got 50 listeners, you know.
Well, once you get the tech out of the way, it's still a lot of work. You know, the tech isn't that hard. Once you set it up, you can pretty much forget it. And it's just the amount of work that it takes to do it. I mean, I have a hard time keeping my schedule, and I'm only doing 30 to 60 minutes a week, you know, but I do it.
And
for the most part.
It is. It's a lot of
work.
It's
work.
It's fun. I have a great time doing my show today, but there are some days, man, some days it is a Red Bull evening. Yeah. Get through the show.
I always tell people it's like tennis. You know what I mean? In a way, I know a lot of people play tennis or soccer. It's a lot of fun, but they come off that court sweating. You know, it's like, so.
Well, people always wonder, you know, I'm part of a morning show sometimes on rock radio, and people wonder why the shifts are only 4 hours. Well, you do 4 hours of live radio, you're whooped. You know, not including what little show prep you might do beforehand. And, you know, and I'm just reading the news, you know, once an hour and then just, you know, joking around with everybody the rest of the time. And it's, I mean, you get tired, you know, and it's brain work. And, you know, podcasting's the same thing. You know, you got to do your show prep. You know, if you do editing, you got to do your editing and all that. And, you know, people just decide that you know, two or three hours
that's
a week.
I stopped
is,
doing the 24-hour podcast. I was afraid I was going to stroke out right here in the chair.
I can only imagine, because it's a matter of being on, for lack of a better phrase. I used to when I would drive somewhere. Like there were times when I would drive to Michigan from Ohio to teach a class. I wasn't worried about the class. I was worried about the drive home, because after 8 hours of being on. And then I get in the car, and that adrenaline rush goes. It's like about an hour into the drive, I'm like, "Oh, I need to take a nap."
So for NAB, I'm going to NAB, and I've been asked by a couple of companies to come on and do some content. And they're like, "Would you like to do 4 hours?" And I'm just like, "Are you crazy?"
Yeah,
I said no. I said an hour and a half is tops, 2 hours. And they, well, why can't you do 4? And I'm like, because it'll suck. And I want to see the show. So that, you know, and during CES, the same thing. When we were doing CES, we tried to keep shifts 2 to 3 hours at most. And in there, at least you have a new guest coming on every 15 minutes and you've got someone fresh to talk to until you get the boring guy and you got to, like, you know, pull every bit of information out. But No, well, we did
another iPhone last year.
We didn't have any of that. I think one got through us, but so you know, NAB this year, I'm excited because I'm going to be able to kind of like take it easy. Maybe when I get be an attendee, yeah,
be an attendee,
go and actually learn something.
Yeah.
So, and I'm going to be carrying a camera for a couple.
Go down in the drone area there. That's
so I'm going to carry a camera for the first couple of days, but after that, it's going to be, you know, and I'm not going to be, if I find something really cool, I'll do an interview. Otherwise, not. So yeah. I didn't, I can't believe we're already an hour 17, so that's good. Daniel, you're going to be at NAB, right? I think he's going to be there. Jeffrey Powers is going to be there. I've heard of a bunch. You're going to be for the last 2 days. Okay, that's cool. Yeah, so we're going to have to do some sort of a meetup or dinner or something one of those nights. The key about going to trade shows and making friends with the PR people, you try to score as many free meals as possible.
That's a good thing in Vegas.
So whenever someone says, hey, we're having an evening event, would you like to come? And I always reply, is it going to be a pitch, or are we having dinner, or what's the evening event? Is it, and if it's poo-poos, the poo-poo events are lower on the scale than the sit-down events. So you want to go to sit-down events when you're going to, and they really feed you well. So you still have to listen to a pitch, but at least you get a plate and actual food on it.
That's good. Then they got to have a good pitch to keep you awake.
Right.
You're all stuffed.
And they typically aren't cheap. They typically, take you someplace decent. You might be part of a 20 or 25 person crowd. And, you're going to have to do an article for them. But you don't necessarily have to. But it's nice if they fed you to do one. So I guess that is pay to play, right?
Right.
That was the nice thing about those Ford events. They feed you good.
Too bad they quit doing many of those podcast events from Ford, those drive events. Yeah.
There's junkets
all the time. So, if you are, and that maybe we talk about the last part of the show here. I annually get one or two free trips by somebody. They'll say, would you like to come out? And last year, I actually sent Marlo Anderson on a junket through Arkansas. The Arkansas tech community was looking to get exposure to startups in Arkansas. So they did a 3-day run them all over the state, and basically went and saw startups in Arkansas, of all places. And they flew you in, paid your meals, paid for your hotel, and drove you around, and you got to meet with a dozen tech companies. So if you are a travel writer, or if you're a whatever your topic is, there's always these types of junkets going on that you can get on and get a free trip somewhere, plus be able to get a bunch of extra content for your show. You just have to keep your earball to what's going on in the communities and to be able to score those types of deals. So what happens is once you're on a list too, it seems like it kind of perpetuates itself as long as you behaved yourself. And we should probably talk just a little bit about that. Yeah. Mike, what's my number one rule when we're going to a trade show event?
I remember CES is don't ask for free stuff.
Yeah, so you go to a booth, they got these shiny gadgets. You look at this, and they got this brand new microphone or whatever it is, and you're like, I want one, and don't ask. Say the way to say it is, do you have these available for review? If you do, I'd love to be on your list post show. Because if they think you're coming in and because this is what a lot of people do at trade shows, they kind of come in and try to get samples. And it nothing more pisses trade show vendors off more than someone coming in looking for a sample. But if you're respectful and it's a product that you really want to review, they will contact you after the show and you'll get a review unit. And about 7 out of 10 times, you will not have to return the review unit. Now, do I have them in here? Let me look.
That's how I got this headset, is that they sent it to me as a review unit, and then I ended up buying it from them at a reduced
rate. Yeah, if that's something you're looking to do, you want to contact the marketing department, not the sales department. The sales department will try to sell you one.
Yeah.
The marketing department, it's their job to get it out to the public. So you want to contact the marketing people if you're...
So like,
Yeah, I actually got a Heil headset here that I haven't plugged in yet that they sent me. And I did the same thing. I said, hey, I'd love to review one. I'm going to have to send it back, but it's a similar mic to this thing.
Right now, I've got four tablets and two mobile phones that are here waiting for me to do a review. I get to keep them for 6 weeks. They provided a return shipping level. So stuff, those I have to send back. But again, it's about that added value content that's going on the website. Now, often, and I've got a basket of stuff in my garage of unsolicited stuff that companies send me all the time that say, will you review this? And sometimes it's a $14.95 SD card reader or something like that. And that type of stuff that comes unsolicited, I do not review. If the PR person hasn't contacted me and said, will you review this? If they send it to me, thank you for stuff like for my kids to swag bag. Yeah, laptops.
Do you recognize this?
Oh, so
that's the first Chromebook.
So you
it's a CR48, and they sent me that completely unsolicited. It just showed up one day, and
I've got a drone here right now. Let me show you the box. This box, this Extreme Gravity Pursuit drone, came completely unsolicited, $295, and I won't even tell you how it flew the first time because I'm...
You're going to be nice?
Did it land or did it arrive?
Excellent.
Oh, it landed.
You know the difference between a good landing and a bad landing. A good landing, you can use the airplane again. An excellent,
a lot of unsolicited stuff comes. So if depending on your content, you can add to your. But when you go to these trade show events, don't ask for stuff. That's ask if you're having a good rapport with the person, and if they have review units, that's fine. But the last thing that you want to do is make them feel uncomfortable. Well, I think it's going to wrap us up. Dave, why don't you tell everybody where they know? Most folks online here today can know where to find you. But
Find me over at schoolofpodcasting.com. If you like live call-in shows, I'm actually right before Todd on Saturday morning at askthepodcastcoach.com. So that's where you can find me. Todd, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Mike?
Yeah, you can find me over at podcasthelpdesk.com. And it's a show similar to Dave's, although his has got higher energy. I don't drink enough Red Bull.
And of course, you can find me here at newmediashow.com or over on geeknewscentral.com. Follow me on Twitter at Geek News. If you have Rob, of course, wasn't here today, but if you have comments for Rob, it's at Rob Greenlee on Twitter or Rob@robgreenlee@gmail.com, I believe. If I got it wrong, Rob, I'm sorry. Or Rob@newmediashow.com. That'll get him here. Todd at New Media Show, again, at Geek News on Twitter. So if we're gonna hang out here, if you guys want to hang with us, that's fine. We'll hang for a little while post-show. But for those of you listening or watching the show, thanks for being with us today. And we'll see you. Well, programming note. I'll be in the East Coast. I'll be flying back from the East Coast next Saturday. So I think we're going to do a Sunday show next week. Things are what we're having trouble on is guests don't like to come on Saturday. They like to come on Monday through Friday during business hours because the majority of the podcasting world are living the corporate life, unlike the rest of us podcasters who are living the the podcasting life. So we've had some trouble getting on folks that are not willing to take time out of their Saturday morning to come on the show. And I understand, right, especially if you're on the East Coast and you're doing the New York hustle bustle or one of those areas. But we'll be here for you next week, I believe, on Sunday because of my travel plans. But everyone, thanks for being here. We'll see you next week on the New Media Show.